time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Yeah. Anyway, alright, so I was thinking, about thinking about what it is to be alive and all that crap and how to convey whatever this crap is, you know, in the brain to other people in some form that is, you know, in some way triggers reactions, reflexes, trigger words, I guess is the way to play the game. So, you know, that's sort of what I noticed. I mean, I noticed this a video by a guy and it's titled Peter Singer, Ordinary People Are Evil. And so it has 1,700,000 views, where other videos by the same guy about Kant or somebody else, blah, 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 you know, 50,000, something like that. So clickbait and all that kind of crap. It wasn't the actual title of Singer's, you know, statement, which was pretty strange in the sense he titled the paper Famine, Affluence, and Morality. You know, and it's just some diatribe on how somehow we're obligated to fix other people's, every other person's problem. So no matter what kind of trouble some kind of person gets into, we're obligated to fix it. You know, it's a statement, something like that, which, you know, is just, it's kind of stupid, frankly. All right, so anyway, so in doing this, you know, it's just this, you just want to get it over with. You just want to say, well, look, there's these certain observations in my brain. That's what I would call them, observations. You can call them conclusions, you can call them beliefs, you can call it ideology, but that all has to do with how somebody derives their understanding. So there's a bunch of people who derive their understanding because somebody told them so. So you could argue they just believe it. They didn't observe it. You know, they didn't see it so. They didn't experience it so. They just accepted it as so because somebody says so, or because it says so in the book, or it says so on a rock somewhere. And, you know, it's not a very credible way of acquiring your brain state, I guess I would argue, is just to inherit it. You could argue through observation that that doesn't work. All right, so you could say that every philosopher, Kant or Nietzsche or whatever, all these people are just really attempting to articulate their observations in terms of trying to take the numbers that exist in the universe and make sense of them, so to speak. Order things in the right order, list of priorities. And it's all how you kind of say something. It's like whatever his name is, the value, the moral landscape, he called the book. And my brain keeps turning it into the value landscape because it's really not about something called morality or even ethics. It's just kind of recognizing where value exists. And then you just kind of have to do some sort of math to figure out how you balance the values. And so that's just part of the explanation, I guess, in terms of just saying it's you observe what works and what doesn't work in your life, and you can figure some of this stuff out. So I would start where I observe that I'm a brain, you know. Not the first observation, but it's sort of like the biggest one, is that the me, whatever that is, exists in this mushy brain thing, and that it's doing this thinking thing. You know, it's writing this script of whatever. Some people would just call it rant or whatever this is that I'm doing right now, where my brain has compiled a bunch of sentences ahead of time and has a whole direction it wishes to head in and blah blah blah, and you know, somehow it's goal oriented, and it's doing these calculations of how to put this stuff together in a way that will be in some way convey my observation to you, okay, enable you to see what I see in a way. And, you know, that's the goal. and it doesn't. And I don't really have anything to do with it. Yeah, it's me, okay? I'm responsible. my brain did it. But I really didn't have anything to do with it in the sense that, I'm really not doing it, okay? I'm just sitting here watching it, saying just like you, oh, okay, you could have said that better. Oh, could have done it, you know. Yeah. I'm evaluating my own performance as I'm performing. That's what brains do. So that's the first observation, is that brains do these certain little functions. And then the other observation is the brain creates this feeling thing, you know, this mood, temperament, emotions and sensations that, can in the extreme case be extraordinarily, profoundly negative, and in some ways beautifully pleasurable. and that's part of the context of what we're playing for in terms of, well, that's the part that, you know, if you're going to say there's a push-to-shove thing, you know, where things get real, that's when it gets pretty real, is when your brain is creating especially those negative ones, when you're in a negative state of physical condition and or mental disposition, it's not good. Yeah, so that's where the value comes in. So the value is just about that feeling state. So, again, just a simple observation. That's what I am, okay? Just a kind of a machine. I can go through how, I'm basically just programmed by the external world has just banged into me in a certain way, and that's why I observe what I observe. But I think there's a reasonable argument to be made that we bang into a lot. And maybe it's like a page of Braille, you know, and to somebody who doesn't understand the code, that it's just a bunch of bumps on the paper. But somebody who can read it, because they've had enough experience playing with it and touching it and feeling it, they can start to see the patterns and recognize them for what they're, you know, where they really sit. So I could argue that there definitely is a difference in integrity to different conversations with different people who are, you know, Braille readers and people who are just
feels like bumps to me,
you know. It's just a fact. So there's credible statements about reality and incredible statements about reality, I guess you could argue. And certainly there's a very real kind of foggy line, where there's stuff that's really quite credible, but you can't be certain. But I'd say it's... It's all readable, I think. I think we have almost a good enough page of Braille that all the letters are correct. They aren't rubbed off, and there's, you know, not too many missing pieces in terms of recognizing that, you know, well, conspiracies are unlikely, and you go through all the physical circumstances, the defending certain statements about the reality, and argue that, you know, people who believe otherwise are just being silly. They're ignorant, you know, idiocracy, you know, they're idiots, because they really haven't done the necessary banging into to be capable of getting the context right. So I suppose you have to hear a lot of ideas, and then you have to hear people that bring up things like the trolley car paradox or whatever, you know, dilemma. You have to hear these silly arguments about all this different Zeno's whatever, telescope, some sort of all these little pieces of fairy tale sometimes, and just storytelling that illustrate better, you know, the cartoon version. Illustrate certain dilemmas and problems and fallacies and traps that you could fall into in terms of making a philosophical mistake. All right. So, bringing that back to the context of the Peter Singer thing. So, I have limited, I've read some of his stuff, and, it's like so, in a way, it's kind of for dummies, versions of philosophy. Goes to a lot of effort to explain things to what you would think are almost morons. So it's not, it's not technically advanced, okay, in terms of explaining a car engine or something. It's kind of in the, cylinder goes in, gas goes boom, it's, So the paper he wrote in 1972 was, like I said, some tripe about how, we're morally obligated to save the starving people, the 9 million refugees from some stupid political horseshit happening in some third world shithole. Obviously that's just saying, okay, let's just scream with our empathy, okay, but let's not be practical. So I could just say that, yes, that's the instinct. That's the reflex, is to say, problem, let us solve it. But the solution isn't to say, I'm just going to invent a magic refugee island that everything will be fine. They just go to the new continent I'll create for them to live in. The solution isn't going to be just feed them and everything will be okay, because feeding them means they do have babies and they just don't. Obviously, a lot of people live in shit because they have kind of shitty notions of how to live. They're warlords and all this other kind of crap, and they're just going to redo the same shit all over again. So if you don't really fix the problem, you're just, buying time. You're not really fixing anything. You're just saying, instead of them dying on Tuesday, I'll let them die on Thursday. And I'll spend a big pile of money to do it. And that's just, I'm just saying, you can make arguments that, this isn't paying much attention to the real values involved, and what you're going to gain in the long run, which is the only run. So that would be another observation. So besides just saying, okay, I'm a program machine and I think and I feel, the thing to say is that, I observe that I'm just one player in a multiplayer game, and that the real value is in, how the game goes, not how it goes for me individually or anything I point to and say is important. Take a quick pause. All right, well, that didn't do much good. There was an idea I know my brain had, and it lost it, and I couldn't find it again. Even though I sat here and thought, what the hell was I trying to get to? I couldn't get to it. So anyway, I am just describing a hierarchy of observations, statements about reality, let's just call them that. Definitions of reality, truth, proposed truths that are, I think, frankly, irrefutable. I mean, it's the correct identification of the little symbol on the Braille page that we're all reading, attempting to read. And if, you can add it up differently, you can make a different statement, but I don't think you can defend a different statement better as a truth. So I'm sort of in that process with, this conversation about physics, and obviously people are not very conducive to hearing that what they believe isn't right and that the truth is some completely different thing, so the same problems everywhere in terms of proposing that you've added the numbers up wrong, you have the wrong identification of the letters, the words you're making are just nonsense, because you've misidentified these simple observations about the fact that we're just program machines, okay, and that we have these tools, from nature, that give us this ability to scheme our way through an existence, to animate us in such a way that we can do more elaborate and fancier things to acquire the basics of, you know, consumption and reproduction. And we do it through our addictions and, you know, our exploitation of whatever we can exploit, our parasitism. Anyway, and so that's all in sort of this idea of morality and what do you do in these circumstances, and all of those subjects are important. But I would argue that the bigger picture subject is the multiplayer game problem. The problem is that this manifestation of consciousness is not, you know, it's only temporarily your possession. You know, it's a value, a thing, an event that will happen in all these different varieties and forms. And all of that is, in a way, your property. You sort of own that welfare in the sense that you're part of that system and you have a vote, so to speak, in terms of you know, what should be done or what should be allowed to happen, or the conditions that things exist in. Like, we could have a vote, a democracy, and decide we don't think slavery is too bright and maybe we're not going to do that anymore. You know, cruelty, overt cruelty to animals, you know, we're using it for entertainment, you know, their suffering as entertainment. Yeah, we can figure out maybe that's not too good and we won't do that anymore. So we can make some statements that are kind of just basically logical, that the whatever gain there is and isn't worth the pain caused, and, you know, do the basic logic. But again, I'd argue that some of that is just basic and doesn't get to the real point that, you know, our brain, to work well, you know, it has to make observations about its own function. It has to recognize its own hypocrisy and its selfishness. It's, you know, the lengths of duplicity. You know, it can manifest in you know, because it doesn't want, because it's not in its self-interest, or it's not in the glory of its God, or it's not in the, you know, something that it values. And it will reflexively become defensive and fight for things that are just plain stupid because it thinks they're not stupid. Well, it doesn't think that they're not stupid. It's that it hasn't really considered whether it's stupid or not. And so I've often talked about, you know, simple things like nepotism. The fact that we, our brain gets attached to the people that raise us, or that are part of our maturation. And it associates those people as being more important somehow than other people. And for the only reason being that they have personally lived with this person and personally been associated with this person and personally be connected to this person. And they have a history with that person, and therefore that somehow makes the person more valuable or less valuable, or the child, for example. And then you can go to the other arguments, like genetic arguments and the fact that, well, it has my eyes and it, you know, whatever. You know, it has a mole on the back of its neck just like mine. You know, some kind of stupid reason to think this little individual is more precious and more important than all these other individuals who are exactly the same machine. So again, that's part of the, you know, one of these primary observations. Again, I say the words like it's not a single player game. Okay, it's a multiplayer game. We exist in a world where we can observe as a real fact that whatever's going on in our little brains is also going on in all the other little brains. Basically, okay, and they can even extend that quite simply and obviously to animals. You can see them panic, and you can see them fret, and you can see them essentially cry, and, you know, you can see all of these things happen to them that happen to us. And yes, they don't do complex mathematics, and, you know, they don't read Braille. They don't do philosophy. All right, but they do all the other stuff we do, right? And so the real point is the only stuff that we're doing that really has value, that is sort of the creator of value, is the fact that we feel. So if I made a universe and I put all of these things in there and I took away, the only thing I did was I made everything behave like. So I made robotic dogs and robotic bugs and robotic humans and just made them all behave like humans. A robot just that would be reading a mechanical script, okay? No feelings, no welfare involved. You can't torture it. You can't make it feel good. You can't make it feel bad. And I made that universe instead of this universe. I'm just saying that obviously that universe wouldn't, who cares? if it blew up, it didn't blow up. Who cares what happens to it? It can't matter because there's nothing feeling involved. There's nothing that's going to be tortured or tormented or in any way experience this value sensation. So clearly that's where all the value comes from. It's just the fact that some brain can feel. Now, I guess, I don't know why I can't remember his name, the moral landscape guy. I just don't remember, how deeply he grounded the idea beyond just doing it in the analogy way or metaphorical way or, the way of just saying, look, I feel, so therefore I know feelings matter. When, the argument should probably go a little deeper and just say, well, why does the feelings exist? And the fact that they're a brain manifestation, they don't happen anywhere else. So you can make lots of, foundational arguments to justify the point that the source of value is feeling. If I don't have anything feeling in the universe, it couldn't possibly matter what happens. If nothing, feeling is at jeopardy. It wouldn't matter how it evolves or what it does. It couldn't possibly manifest into. And that's what you always have to think about is the future. The future is this, let's see, another observation, right? So this is, it's kind of a simple observation, but it's one of the ones that are sort of important. And I can say that, let's see, when did I first realize that? I can't really say, 13 maybe? That the future is really big and the present is really small. Okay, it's a little tiny bit of time. And the future's, who knows, right? It's, could be a monstrously huge amount of time. And so any change you make, anything you do, you really have to measure its consequences over that long term. So, even if you're gluing something, if there was glue that only lasted 10 hours, and it was 50 cents, and then the, glue that lasted 5 years was $5, the argument could be made that, well, you're much better off buying the $5 glue, okay, because you're probably going to be here in 5 years, and it's probably going to need to still be glued in 5 years. And so it's sort of just a logical thing where you can just do the math and say, yeah, okay, it's much more economical to go with the 5-year glue. So to invest in the future should be one of those things like, after you observe that you're not the only player in the game and that the rules of the game are really important, is that's the math. What's the future going to be? How is the future impacted by what happens, and because that's the big thing. That's where more value exchanges will take place, more events. And you're just basically saying there's a certain event, conscious experience that takes place on planet Earth in a brain. And the fact is that what you want to do is maximize the fact of less torture and more relief, so to speak. But that gets into another observation, okay, that, really what you're playing for is the get rid of the negatives, because if you get rid of the negatives, you basically have the positive automatically. That the game, so I would say I have observed that a better metaphor for our existence is not reward and punishment, but just punishment and then the reward of no punishment. So it's a negative-based game. So I could argue that in physics, you could argue that it's a push universe. And, you think it's push and pull, but now the pulls are really just pushes inverted. And that, all the goods are really just elimination of a bad circumstance, a risk, a threat, an actual, you actually have a nail in your eye and you need it taken out of your eye. you know, the negatives, it's relief from a negative circumstance that is the consequential absence of negative is itself the positive. It's how you feel better by getting out of the quicksand. You're not going somewhere good. You're just getting out of bad. So, again, that's an observation that you could argue needs some foundation. It needs to be, you know, parsed and picked at in terms of, you know, going through all the different feelings we can have, our sensations, our experiences, and measuring how consistent that truth is. But I would argue that it's, you know, if you do all of that crap, it'll still remain a solid conclusion. And even if you conceded that there's 1% or 2% of events that don't really have to do with removing the negative to create the positive, you know, complicated pulls, you know, where you could say, okay, go ahead and believe that's a pull if you wish. You know, I'm not going to bother trying to explain to you how it's a push, but, you know, okay, it's a pull. Who cares? It's a tiny percentage of the actual events. So some of that you can just give away and just say, I'll concede. Okay, you want me to say there are some true goods in the universe, some experiences that aren't fed by negatives? So I could even make the argument that the most visceral or vulgar, you know, of our positive feelings, the orgasm thingy, you know, is derived out of your own negative condition. The fact is that we're constantly burdened by our existence in gravity and, you know, just all of the fatigue and other things that, you know, are built into us. And that, you know, those experiences are like the sneeze or something. It's a kind of a reboot, and it's just a liberation from your fetters, so to speak. The chains, the however you want to metaphor, the burdens of existence. And that you get this few seconds worth of an experience where everything is relaxed for a change, and everything is, the tension is relieved, and the harassments of physical, the fatigue, you could even say, of the neurons, in the sense that they're always sensing and always doing the, you know, and they do something different for a second. They're relieved of their duties and they just go, ah, and that's basically, you know. So I think it could be argued, but even if I gave that one away and I said, okay, you can have that one, that's a free good. It doesn't cost anything. You don't need any negative to create that positive. I would argue it's probably, you probably do, but whatever. You know, the argument can still be made if that's all you're playing for, then that's pretty ridiculous. You know, if that's all you're getting for all of the torment and torture that exists, it'd be pretty easy to draw the equation where you're in the red numbers, you know, that you're running a huge, gigantic, monstrous deficit in terms of your value manipulations, in terms of your navigation of the landscape. You're doing it really badly. Okay, well, I'll take a pause there and see if I can direct the arrow. Am I trying to direct it? Am I trying to point it? You know, what am I trying to do? All right, back. So I want to get back to that nepotism argument because it has to do with how our brain, again, one of these observations about how our brain works in terms of you can recognize your hypocrisy and duplicity and, you know, the selfish thing and how you set up different standards by measuring things and all of this crap. You sort of cheat the ruler when it's measuring you compared to who measuring something else, and you know that's the reflex. The reflexes are stupid, frankly, and the whole point of the brain is to overcome some of those reflexes and to, you know, discipline them into obedience to a better plan. The brain's understanding versus the biology's understanding. So we can have instincts and impulses and, you know, we all learn how to refrain from, allowing those impulses to drive our behavior. You don't just, shit in the living room. You figure out that you have to go to some other room to do that. And, all of that kind of concessions you make to your recognition that civilization works better if the people obey these principles, these ideals, these statements about should and should not. we have impulses and reactions, and so, yes, we are prejudiced and bigoted by our personal experience, by how we are raised and what kind of food we eat and what kind of smells we smell and what kind of behavior people behave as. And we become addicted or attached or even dependent on those kinds of landscape markers, so to speak. They make it easier for us to navigate our world if we're all telling the same lies, the same stories, using the same metaphors and analogies and all of this kind of stuff. And so some of that goes to people's values, and some of it's just raw behavior. in terms of same monkeys, but, dressed entirely different and spouting completely different babble, and languages and all that kind of stuff. So all of those are bits of garbage, frankly, that we have to accept exist in us, and they're not going away. When you're not going to make yourself, you're not going to change what woman you love, okay, or how you're physically attracted, based on some statement your brain says about how, well, that person is so much nicer and they're so much smarter and they're so much this and they're so much that, and you're just going to ignore the fact that there's no innate reflexive desire attached. you can't ignore that, but you do it at a very high price, let's just argue. You can't do that for free. So to some extent, we have to make concessions to our humanity, which basically is our corruption, the corruption of this calculating machine that's calculating at different levels or different levels of functionality. It's got a really crude calculator. It gives you really fast numbers, but they're really bad. And then it has the more complex part that takes its time and really figures out what the right answer is. But it doesn't connect it directly to your feelings. It's indirectly connected. And so it's not going to change how you feel about a circumstance. It's going to, you can know everything there is to know about a snake, but if you have a reflexive reaction to snakes, it's hard to overcome that. It takes a lot of reconditioning to change that visceral reaction. So yes, most people, even myself, viscerally react to the idea of mother and father and sister or brother, and their brain says these are more important people than all the other people, and especially with their own kids, you could say, oh, that's even a stronger prejudice, bias, cheat, possession and ownership. It's my car. Somebody else shouldn't be driving it, that kind of thing. The idea of the owner's mentality extends to this as property and as possession, as if it's a finger or an arm, like it's part of them. But yes, you can understand, so when you do the real thinking part, that none of that is real. That's just crap in your head saying they are your arm. They're more important than somebody else's arm, or something like that. Your brain can know better. It can know, okay, that, whatever child is, okay, it's a property the child has, not who owns it, who gave birth to it, how it was produced. All of that stuff is kind of irrelevant. Certainly it could be relevant to how it's shaped and formed, whether it has a disease or something, or all of that kind of crap could be the fault of, bad planning in terms of its creation. But the fact is that all the properties it has, it has. And, you know, you shouldn't cheat the truth by pretending mine is more important. Because, frankly, that one over there could be more important. I mean, that one could, you know, cure cancer, that one over there. The potential exists in the kids, not in who owns them. And the importance of maturating them, you know, exquisitely, okay, as well as possible, is that obligation exists in the space. It doesn't exist in a person. It exists as just a fact that if you want a better future, you're going to have to raise those kids better than, you can't do this disproportional, I'll invest in them based on which ones I personally am attached to, is not going to be a very productive way of expending your parental instinct, okay, your desire to aid the future will be thwarted if you're going to use this bad standard to decide how to invest in the welfare of children, so to speak. All right, that's kind of what's one way of saying it. I mean, it's a simple argument, okay, that the properties, the value properties exist in the thing. The thing needs, okay, and the thing will have an effect on the world. And that's the truth. And the ones that, like I said, those over there need are just are just as much in need, okay, of your help in getting to the future and doing the right things in the future as the ones that you personally created. There's no rational distinction that can be made saying you automatically know yours are better. Yours are more important. Yours will do more important things. All of that crap is crap. All right. And so it just points out the corruption. So it's just used as an illustration that something that important to human beings is kind of a corrupt subject because people really don't think about it the right way at all. About their obligation, about what their how they're apportioning their love, and that it's all quite corrupt. You know, it's silly even. It's really so stupid and ignorant, and it doesn't really appreciate any of the observations that are just a fact of our existence. That the truth is that yours aren't better than other people's. They didn't pass any test. You didn't measure them. You didn't do anything to prove you're expending your love resources in a reasonable, rational way to the problem that exists. And if the problem was just a problem that for which you didn't have this personal attachment, you'd be able to see the need to apportion your power to help as effectively as possible. I mean, if you were going to pick a charity or something, you'd try to pick one that gets the most money to the problem. You wouldn't pick the one that gets the least money to the problem. so in all these other cases, you can make rational choices because you don't have some sort of personal impediment, some sort of, reptilian monkey kind of thinking, rather than fully brainy-abled human thinking about really getting to the truth. And so the argument is that, yes, most everything that humans consider meaningful or whatever is this kind of crap. So everything these philosopher types talk about, it's all crap. All right, so yeah, famine's a real thing, affluence is a real thing, and ethics are a real thing. but, these trivial ways of understanding them based on some sort of, collective small-mindedness doesn't add up to getting right answers. It's not profound or any of that. The funny thing was, is he used these superly silly words to describe simple concepts. You know, like instead of just saying selfish or stupid or something, you know, use this multi-symbolic jargon to say something very simple. But anyway, so we won't bother with. There's nothing in that conversation, frankly, that's worth the time. But just what it was all connected to was sort of interesting in terms of the fact that it is all just trigger talk. Like, again, if he had put a different title on the video, it would have made a, you know, 90% difference in how many people clicked on the video. And, you know, that's another failure of ours in terms of, you know, we're constantly fighting through all of these crudely manifested reflexes, you know, connections to things. And, you know, we just don't have enough time to do all this thinking thing because we have to live in a world that's kind of fast moving and you have to make quick decisions. And those quick decisions are not necessarily credible, you know, in any way, in the sense that they haven't been conditioned by, you know, an environment that was full of that was already well structured, let's just say. So because you have to wait 40 years in your life, or 50 years, or 80 years to recognize a few of these truths, you can't incorporate them into who you are because you were somebody else. It's almost like being a vegan or something. It's, you know, so much easier if you're just raised as one than having to figure out how to become one. You know, change kind of sucks, and understanding is obligating you to go through this process of change. And some, as pointed out, some of the changes aren't going to be easy. I mean, if somebody proved that it was, you know, more efficient and more practical and better for the world for you to become a homosexual, or vice versa, if you're a homosexual now and you have to become a heterosexual because, you know, we've proven that's the right course for you. Saying and doing are two different things. You know, it's really hard to recondition those basic reflexes. And that's why it's so important how we raise kids and all of this kind of stuff, is because they're going to be in this, it's the same future dilemma, that you raise them to be one kind of monster and they have to live as some other kind of monster, and the two aren't going to be compatible. The bigger, better truth they learn later won't be compatible with the lifestyle they've become attached and dependent on, kind of a thing. All right, that's, yeah. Yeah, well, whatever, it's a video. I'm just not too satisfied with, so far my brain is just saying, well, you're not really, you know, you could do better than this. You know, do better, but how to do it. All right, so the you know, one of these simple things where you're just saying, geez, how far are we, you know, how far am are we distant, you know, from the real conversation? And you could say, like, the right to die kind of subject just sort of shows just how broken, you know, how people think are, because you're just saying, I mean, who could possibly be opposed to allowing people to die gracefully rather than badly? I mean, why would anybody want somebody to die any more brutally than is necessary? I mean, why? Why would, you know, how could they manifest such a kind of evil in them where they would just say it's okay, wasted suffering is a great thing, you know, somehow it's, you know, glory to God. God loves when we suffer for no good reason. You know, we're going to be dead in 6 days, might as well just torture it all the way through those 6 days. Don't bother mitigating against that in any way. You know, I guess you'd almost say it's their hypocrisy that they allow morphine or they allow painkillers, because why wouldn't that be part of God's glory also? You know, his perfect creation, that they have to say we're not allowed to touch, you know, and especially in ways where we would just pragmatically accept that something isn't going to survive. The machine is broken. It's not going to be able to maintain its function. And why drag out the process of the wires melting and the thing catching fire and it's smoking and doing all that crap? Why not just shut it off? I mean, it's almost ridiculous that you have to have the conversation, that you actually have to have a conversation with other feeling beings and explain to them how wasting torture and suffering is about the worst thing you can do. I mean, you might as well go out and, you know, molest kids and rape them and kill them. I mean, what's the difference? You're creating a bunch of totally unnecessary harm for no function. I mean, no good purpose in it at all. Stupid. It's just, you know, and yet, you know, that's a challenging argument. It's a challenging subject. This is a, you know, big controversy. Oh, we can't see the truth. No, it's we need to argue it to death. And you're just saying, wow, you know, if the beings I'm communicating with are so dim-brained that they can ever justify, especially when the person who will be experiencing the pain and suffering is saying quite clearly, yeah, I'm done. Okay, I get it. I am catastrophically broken. I will not be functioning anymore. It's time to just say goodbye in some sort of graceful way instead of, you know, my guts, you know, flying out of my orifices and stuff. Yeah, let's not do that part. Let's not do the oozing blood thing, the, you know, hemorrhage thing. Let's not do all this ugly, disgusting stuff. Let's just say, okay, I get it. We're done. The wiring has gotten old and brittle and fucked up, and it's just not going to work anymore. And so before it explodes, let's just turn it off. You know, it seems so simple and logical. I don't, you know, you're saying, oh, why should this be an argument? It's just, it's so ridiculous that we actually have to sit there and try to explain, you know, why it's wrong to impose unnecessary suffering. You know, why you should kill an animal the slowest way possible. You know, is that, you're going to defend that? Well, they actually do that, right? I mean, the whole, you know, the whole Jewish thing of, you know, purifying their meal by torturing it. You know, I mean, what the fuck? A little too stupid. Way too stupid. Way too stupid to be defendable in, you know, 2023. Humans should be further up the staircase than this. That we still have to have these arguments. So anyway, that's just an easy observation from my perspective. That one was, I was never in any doubt. I mean, there was never some point in my life where I said, oh yes, it's really important to have that unnecessary suffering. No, that it never occurred to me. I mean, it's the kind of thing you got right away. You know, if somebody, you know, you saw somebody on TV or something, and they shot a horse or something. And then they explained, well, you know, shot the horse because, you know, it can't, it's just going to be tortured for the rest of its life if you try to reclimate it. And it's just not going to work. So get it over with quick and, you know, as painless as possible. Yeah, I get that. I don't like it, okay? I mean, I emotionally am still troubled by the fact that the poor horse has to die. I don't like that fact, but I know I'm not going to win against death by torturing things. Torture is not going to defeat death. You know, prolonging suffering and misery and pain and woe and all of that crap is not a good way to fight the sadness of the fact that the world does kind of suck. And, you know, these are shitty rules we have to play by. You know, it sucks to make something, get it to the point where it's actually working, and then just pointlessly have it degrade and break. You know, I wouldn't invent that, okay? I mean, if it was my world to create, that's not a creation I would bother with. You know, that's not a great idea, you know, to implement. is disposal, destruction. These are negative things, and you know, we reflexively react to them as negatives for good reason. But you're not going to fix that broken part of the game by breaking some other part of the game. That's not going to work. You know, breaking the logic of recognizing the efficiencies to be gained by, you know, minimizing the amount of suffering and torture that takes place, it certainly isn't a game enhancer. You're not going to make the game better or more meaningful or more defendable by just making it more torturous and agonizing and horrible. By putting more of those negative experiences in the game, you're not really winning the argument against the pessimist. You know, it's a kind of a silly use of your optimism in the long run, I guess I would argue. Because it's obviously not happening in the short run. In the short run, yes, you're winning with, you know, baby talk, baby thinking. Incredibly immature, silly, counterproductive reactions to a circumstance that just don't do any good. They're just not a useful way of mitigating against the nature of the negative circumstance. And again, that's all built on the fact that they think the negative circumstances are all part of some master plan, because they're not recognizing the simple truth that that's not our origin. We didn't live in a paradise, and we don't live in one now. There's no plan, okay? There's just a kind of a brutal, yeah, that's a whole nother observation, war, frankly, between a bunch of these brains trying to gain their gratification and doing it in insanely expensive ways. And that gets back to the whole instinct running the machine rather than the thoughtful part running it and recognizing that, yeah, that's all I am. I'm selfish, I'm compulsive, I'm driven, I'm impulsive, and none of those things are good. And all of those things, if allowed to control how I vote, so to speak, would make me even more dangerous, because I can, you know, conform the game to my particular needs rather than recognize that the game needs to be played by players designed to play it. You know, that you have to organize civilization. It doesn't happen by itself. And we're all culpable and responsible for the civilizations we have. Okay, that's getting a little abstract, but anyway. All right, one more break. All right, so... yeah, as often happens, I mean, you know, all my brain can do is vaguely set a direction. It says kind of, I'm going to go that way and do something. And then as it's navigating, it jumps from here to there and gets its shoes wet. And now it can't run as fast because its shoes are wet, because it said something. And now it's got to, you know, tie all this stuff together. And so it ends up going a little crooked. And so, yeah, this video went a little sideways. But anyway, the idea was just that I'm just a bag of observations. I mean, you can hate the observations. No point in hating me, I guess. And you can argue the observations. But, you know, I don't think... I haven't seen any evidence that any of the observations, any of the points, any of the statements I'm going to make about, or I have made about reality, are going to be defeated by any kind of meaningfully decent or reasonable logic. Yeah, there's just no evidence. There's no, I mean, they're really not hard to see truths. So if I argue that there's absolutely no good reason for us to stop people from committing suicide or to prevent people from dying when they want and how they want, or, you know, these kind of arguments are indestructible. And you really have to be on some other agenda than the truth to sit there and defend any notion that you're preserving anything of any value, that you're doing anything good for the future or for the welfare of humans or for the welfare of animals on Earth or for anything's good, in your moronic defense of your silly notions of reality, okay, that aren't based on you observing anything. They're based on you not looking at the truth, not looking at the evidence for evolution, or not looking at the evidence that, you know, religions are fables. They have no truth value at all. However, there is absolutely no reasonable evidence of the existence of a God. There's no physical evidence, and there's no logical evidence in the sense that there's everything about our existence indicates a lack of intelligence guiding it rather than intelligence guiding it. And that we are the only source, that we have to manifest the intelligence. If there's to be any intelligence manifested, we have to manifest it. We have the brain capable of possessing it and driving it. And that gets to, you know, it sort of slides up against that stupid AI nonsense where they think that's intelligence when it doesn't know what a feeling is. So it's going to understand the value landscape, and it's going to draw you a blueprint of what reality and meaning is and what life is, when it's not alive and it's missing the most important component, which is any notion of understanding what a value is, because it's never had to experience a feeling. Hasn't sampled one. Okay, so it has no idea what it's playing with. Humans testify that, you know, so if you go by the human testimony, right, some people say, oh, it's no big deal to have your head cut off. I've had my head cut off many times. No big deal, you know. You have all kinds of extremes in terms of what people will endure for what value, how much people will compromise, you know. So, it can't mean anything to an artificial intelligence to say who's right and who's wrong about their statements regarding the meaning of torture. Because again, you know, there's plenty of people who will justify any amount of it as long as somebody else is experiencing it. And then some of them are masochists, you know, and they sort of enjoy doing their stoic, I can take it, go ahead, you know, gut me, you know, bullshit. So that's where the video was heading, because I'm just trying to think of how to organize this stuff. And the idea is that they're just, you know, I could argue their beliefs are their conclusions, but I just think it's more sensible to call them observations, because they're just something you see in the world. You see it. You experience your life and you see the conclusion in the actual circumstance. You see the badness of the pain of, you know, harm and death, and you experience it, and you can recognize how, yeah, this is a, you know, this is the price you're paying. And now you have to figure out, are you getting enough positive to justify the price you're paying? And so now it's all about just seeing us in the real context of what are we really. We're slaves to our impulses, we're slaves to our desire, and then we become slave clans and groups, you know, gangs of slaves, and fighting with each other, you know, to see who can outmaneuver who to get, you know, the day off, you know, who can bribe the slave master to whip us a little less, you know, by selling our women to him or something, you know, some kind. It's all just so dirty and foul. And you're saying, so you're torturing organisms for this, you know, that's the end conclusion. And obviously I would say the end conclusion that this isn't a playable game, and by anything intelligent, nothing intelligent would sentence its kind to be a perpetual and redundant slave. that just ain't smart. It's not logical, and it wouldn't be done. You know, so I don't think that'd be an interesting to see if you could actually clone people. You know, whether people would sentence their clone to live the average life. You know, as defined, the average house, you know, living in the average house with the average people, eating the average crud, you know, working the average job. I don't think they would. So anyway, I think we'll call that a video and such. So, it would be nice to be able to write the story, you know, just relevant to that whole thing of being here on Earth. You know, what's the first observation? What's the second observation? The third observation? But, you know, it comes, the knowledge comes in such a broken order. You know, the important truths, you know, don't come first. You know, you observe very unimportant truths early, and some of the really important ones you don't get till much later, unfortunately. You know, it's not a single player game. That one I got when I was about 10, 9, 10, 11, somewhere in there. Well, it started creeping up on me, let me just put it that way. You know, it's when, you know, the carcass of the Thanksgiving turkey started looking wrong to me. There was something wrong with this picture. That kind of thing. But yeah, it takes a little bit of time, you know, and then some things you don't figure out until you're 50. But anyway, or 90, or whatever. You don't observe properly. You don't see it the way it is. And you recognize, whoops, you know, I didn't quite get that part, and that was really an important part to get. Alright, so that's probably enough of a video. So, till the next time, and such, and so forth, and whatnot. This has been a Do Not God. And seriously, just don't waste your brain on, you know, silly old archaic nonsensical retarded fables. Force your God to really talk to you, or just say fuck it. Come on, time to grow up. All right, till the next time and such.